Perfect Stranglers contains graphic and explicit content suitable for mature listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Perfect Stranglers. This is Kylie.
And I'm Bree.
And I'm going to apologize right off the bat for the next, for the last episodes that we have. If I sound echoey, it's because I'm in a new place and my walls are no longer covered in shit. I don't have carpet. So if I sound like I'm in an empty room, I'm not, but I'm in a different house and that's why. And you're just going to deal with it. And that is what it is.
Yep.
It's all I can do. Okay. Can we talk about allergies?
Yeah, let's. Because okay. I threw up today because of allergies.
Wait, what? Okay, you have the weirdest allergy symptoms. You have like itchy gums.
Yeah.
And then you threw up?
I threw up because all night I was getting throat drainage and then I just had a bunch of snot in my stomach and it made me nauseous and then I threw up.
Oh, so what do you use for allergy meds? Like, what's your sitch?
I use Zyrtec.
Have you ever tried?
Generic.
Okay, so I use like Walgreens or Target Zyrtec, but my allergies get really bad, especially when I go to St. Louis for work, because just like La Crosse, it's right on the Mississippi. Like in Michigan, my allergies are not that bad. Back home in La Crosse or in St. Louis, my allergies are infinitely worse. It is unbearable. I have found that a Claritin in the morning and a Zyrtec at night helps a lot.
Oh.
So my aunt was a nurse for a long time, and she always told me it's okay to double up.
Yeah, well, they're different kinds of allergy medicine, so they probably work a little bit differently.
Yep. I've done like the nasal spray in a Zyrtec. I've done Claritin in the nasal spray, but for me, Claritin in the morning and Zyrtec at night works best.
Interesting.
So I would give it a shot.
Yeah, I've never thought about that before. Using different ones.
I would give it a shot.
Yeah.
Cool. Highly recommend. So my allergies, this is what's happening. I'm much closer to Lake Michigan now. And like when I go to the lake, I don't really notice my allergies are bad. But like living closer to the lake, what I'm noticing is I have my windows, all open today. They've been closed for like the entire time I've been here, which is like four days. I opened them all today. And I don't have a runny nose or anything, but I can definitely like tell my throat is like has gunk in it. I'm coughing. I have a really scratchy throat.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening is like a scratchy throat, cough, gunk. It has to be allergies.
Yeah. Yeah, I usually check when I get some like an allergy flare up, I usually check the allergy report to see what kind of pollen is high, so that like, because I've never gotten like a proper allergy test. I just go by that, like if tree pollen or mold or whatever is really high, then I know that's what I have allergies to.
That's a really good idea. I've never done that before. I wonder what's high right now, because it's really like I cannot stop today. What is high? Tree pollen is moderate. Ragweed, mold, and grass pollen is low. Looks like tree pollen is what's doing it for me today. I never even thought about that being a freaking thing.
Yeah. Usually it's tree pollen for me, and then in the fall it's the molds and stuff.
Yes, it's a tree pollen. Oh my god, this is like honestly a game changer for me, Brie. I've never thought about that.
Kind of look out for it.
Yeah. Well, we have one hell of an episode today, so I feel like we should just get into it.
Yeah.
And Brie, you've been really good at doing housekeeping of what we have to say. Now, so can you do it, please?
Yeah.
Okay, because I don't remember what you said, but remember last time you did it, I was like, Brie, that was the most beautiful housekeeping we've ever done.
Yeah, I kind of revised it because it's too late to submit a story that would be on our podcast at this point. But you can still submit them. So As we wrap up season two of Perfect Stranglers, we want to thank all of our listeners sincerely. We won't be coming back for a season three, and it's already too late to submit a story to be read on the podcast, but we still want to hear your weird and strange paranormal and true crime stories. We will just do something a little bit different with them. We'll post them to our social media. And we at Perfect Stranglers have Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And those won't be going away. They'll remain up even after we hang up our podcasting hats. Please follow us on social media to keep in touch. Same goes for our catalog of episodes. Those are going to remain up as well for all of posterity. And please take a second to give us a rating on whatever platform you listen to. We'd greatly appreciate it. And also please subscribe to us on whatever platform you listen to us, because you don't want to miss our stacked episode list, and you definitely don't want to miss our finale of Perfect Stranglers. So today,
beautiful,
we're talking about Ed Gein today.
Nipple belts.
Yes, exactly. So I mean, what true crime podcast wouldn't like be complete without talking about Ed Gein? So we got to.
Exactly.
So yes. So today, the infamous icon of the true crime world, Ed Gein, who has inspired many horror films, from the book and the movie called Psycho. Norman Bates's character was inspired by Ed Gein, as was Leatherface, the killer from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. Although Ed Gein is often grouped with serial killers, he isn't technically a serial killer. But let's start at the beginning. So, Edward Theodore Gein was born on August 27th, 1906, in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
I consider him to be a hometown murderer. Like, he's my hometown murderer. I tell people that. I know he didn't murder. I know he didn't murder in La Crosse, but he was born there. Therefore, it's his hometown.
Yes. And he probably, maybe, still has some relation in town.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Absolutely. Somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't that long ago.
Right. So, he was born to Augusta and George Gein, the second son of the family. Augusta was a strict Lutheran matriarch who had her thumb on her husband and two boys. She preached to them that all women, aside from her, of course, were promiscuous instruments of the devil. Basically, she was like Bobby Boucher's mom from The Waterboy. You know, everything's the devil. Little girls are the devil.
That comparison is spot on.
Yeah.
It's spot on.
So, she would not allow her boys to play with the other children their age. If they brought a friend home from Sunday school that they wanted to be friends with, she would always find something wrong with that child and never let them come over again. Ed Gein's father was an alcoholic, and his mother preached how evil alcohol is and how much she hated her good-for-nothing husband, who couldn't keep a job. He worked as a carpenter, Ed Gein's father did, worked as a carpenter and an insurance salesman at various times. But in La Crosse, George Gein owned a local grocery store for a few years, but they sold it. And the family moved out of the big city of La Crosse, which, newsflash, is not a big city.
Not even.
But Augusta Gein considered it to be a large, sinful city. So she moved her family to Plainfield to be able to raise her young boys without all the evils of the big city. So Plainfield is an isolated place in itself. Their nearest neighbor was 1 mile away. But Ed's mother would further isolate her sons. Every moment of time that wasn't being spent at school or on farm chores was filled with fire and brimstone lectures about death and the afterlife. After eighth grade, Ed dropped out of school. Although he stopped going to school, he continued to be an avid reader. When Ed was 31, his father, who had beaten and instilled fear into the entire family for years, was now an invalid. After years of alcoholism and wasting the family's money, George Gein was now dependent on his family for care, and he could no longer contribute to farm work. 3 years later, George died at the age of 66 from pneumatic fluid on the lungs. Augusta Gein attributed George's death to weakness and often remarked that George would be going to hell. So she wasn't too broken up about it. After this, Henry, who was Ed Gein's older brother, and Ed, now being the men of the family, took odd jobs in order to support the family. They'd help as farmhands and handymen, and they were considered reliable and trustworthy gentlemen around town. Ed even babysat children, and he was good at it too, because his simple childlike mind could relate to children better than adults.
Oh, well, I mean, I could see that.
Yeah, I don't think I'd let my kid be babysat by Ed Gein.
No, but like, would you, if you wouldn't have known what he turned into, you would never have known that your kids were babysat by the Ed Gein.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't. Mm-hmm. So my friend Emily always says, you don't know your Ted Bundy's mother until you know your Ted Bundy's mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't know your kid was babysat by Ed Gein until you learn your kids were babysat by Ed Gein, you know?
When Ed was 38 years old in 1944, his brother Henry began to openly criticize their mother and Ed's worship of her. Ed took great offense to the very idea that their mother was wrong in any way. And a month later, Henry died under suspicious circumstances. Well out fighting a runaway fire in the marshlands behind their house, Ed claims that he lost sight of Henry and he went to go get help, claiming he didn't know where Henry was. But when they'd been fighting this grass fire, you know, the smoke and everything, he lost sight of him. So he went to the police for help. And although he claimed he didn't know where Henry was, Ed led the police right to Henry's body.
Hmm.
He wasn't burned, and he had bruising on his head. Police chalked it up to him passing out from smoke inhalation and then hitting his head on a nearby rock as cause of death. Thinking that the child like Ed Gein was incapable of homicide, and figuring that the family had already been through enough, they left it at that and didn't investigate any further. So now it was just Ed and his mother living at the home, but Augusta became very ill and had to be hospitalized not long after Henry's death. She had suffered a stroke. Augusta had become very concerned with the type of books that Ed was reading, which included topics of head shrinking, grave robbing, and human anatomy.
Head shrinking. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Nope.
He liked like pirate books and Nazi books and like adventure type books.
You had me at pirate and adventure. You lost me at Nazi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it was like pro-Nazi or just, I'm not sure. So, she wondered how Ed would do on his own once she died. But she didn't have to wonder very long because she died after suffering a second stroke at the age of 67. Ed sobbed like a child at his mother's funeral. He was now all alone and friendless, and he had no family. At home, he boarded up his mother's bedroom to keep it preserved just as it was when she was alive. A little over a year later, Ed's intense isolation may have contributed to his strange behavior and the strange visions he said he had. started visiting his mom's grave at the cemetery, and after several visits, he began to dig up other corpses in the same cemetery. The first one being his own mother. He dug his own mother up, and he decapitated her by twisting her head off with his bare hands.
Oh, he took... my God. Sorry, I know it's not funny. I mean, imagining it.
It's not funny per se, but it's just like so ridiculous that it's just like, what the heck, you know?
I know. Thank you.
So he took his mother's head home and he tried to make a shrunken head out of it like his books described. Ed would read the obituaries and dig up recently buried women around the same age as his mother. He avoided being caught by watching the obituaries because you can tell that the graves that are freshly filled in, you could tell if an old grave had been disturbed, but not a freshly filled grave. So, yeah. Which is pretty smart, actually.
Yeah.
If you're into that sort of thing. So.
If you're into that sort of thing, wink, wink.
In 1954, Ed became entranced with Mary Hogan, a loud, tall woman of 54 who swore like a sailor and owned a local bar. Ed frequented her bar before her death. The reason she interested him so much was because she slightly resembled Ed's mother, Augusta, except she was exactly opposite in nearly every other way. Kind of an anti-Augusta, if you will. Mm. Well, one night in December of 1954, Ed stayed at the bar till closing time, and he shot Mary Hogan to death with a shotgun, and he took her body home. The following day, Ed was working with another local man on a handyman project, and the subject of the missing bar owner was a big topic of discussion in the small town of Plainfield when police found shell casings and blood on the floor of Mary Hogan's tavern, but no Mary Hogan. Well, you won't believe what Ed had to say about the matter. He told the guy that he was working with, "Oh no, she's not missing. I've got her up at the house right now."
Oh, God.
Yeah. The guy thought that he was making an off-color joke because Ed Gein was kind of a different kind of guy, to say the least, but mostly people around town felt that he was a harmless simpleton. So, not to get ahead of ourselves, but you will hear about Mary Hogan again later. A few years later, Ed had started to take a liking to a woman in her late 50s named Bernice Warden, who had run her family's hardware store herself since her husband died in 1931. Ed asked her out on dates a few times. He asked her if she'd like to try out the new floor at the skating rink. He also asked her to go dancing and to a movie. All offers that she declined. Bernice's son, Frank Warden, who was a sheriff's deputy in town, was aware of Ed's advances on his mother and thought he was quite an odd fellow. In November 1957, the day before deer hunting season started, Ed went to the Warden's hardware store to inquire about the cost of antifreeze. Bernice and her son were both in the store that night, and Frank remembered Ed saying that he'd be back the next day to buy the antifreeze. And the next day was the opening day of deer season, and most of the men in Plainfield were out in the woods. Ed went to Warden's hardware store where Bernice was working alone, and he asked to buy some of the antifreeze. As soon as Bernice started writing out the receipt, Ed went to the section of the store that held the shotguns for sale, and he put a bullet that he had brought with him in one of the shotguns and he shot Bernice Warden, leaving a trail of blood out of the store. Ed locked the door of the hardware store before he left, and after a full day of deer hunting, Frank Warden stopped by the family hardware store and was surprised to find it locked. And he also saw the blood on the floor. When he went inside the store, he saw the receipt for the antifreeze and immediately suspected Ed Gein. Frank Warden called for help from his fellow officers, and some of the officers went to Ed's house as Frank Warden searched for Ed around town. Frank found Ed finishing up his dinner at a local cafe and questioned Gein about the whereabouts of his mother, and Ed said, "I had nothing to do with it." But Frank didn't believe him, and he arrested him and took him to jail. Meanwhile, at the Gein property, officers were doing an investigative search on the property. A few years earlier, there had been reports of a terrible smell coming from the Gein property, but police did not investigate it at all. But I bet they wished that they had investigated that a bit sooner, once they saw the house of horrors that Ed Gein was keeping. In the dark woodshed, they found the mutilated and decapitated body of Bernice Warden hanging by the ankles from a ceiling beam. Her hands were tied to her sides with rope, and she had been sliced from the groin to the sternum, with all the internal organs removed in a manner that resembled how you would dress a deer. Upon viewing this atrocity, some of the investigators went outside and promptly vomited.
Absolutely. That is the appropriate response. I don't care what profession you're in, if you've seen this day in and day out, that is the only appropriate response to that.
Yeah. God, I can't imagine.
The smell alone.
Right. Know? Yeah, you know something's wrong when you smell something.
It reminds
terrible.
Me of the Jerry Brudos episode where they didn't smell the body.
Yeah. John Wayne Gacy, when he had those people over for dinner.
Yeah.
And they smelled a little something weird, but then they were like, I don't know.
Exactly. I don't get it.
Yeah. So Bernice Warden's head was found in a bag inside of the woodshed. Nails had been hammered into each of her ears and a string attached them so the head could hang like an ornament.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And that was just...
Holy shit.
Yeah, that was just the woodshed.
Oh my God.
The house contained unimaginable horrors. In the house, investigators found whole human bones and fragments, skulls on the bedposts, masks made from the skin of female heads, four noses, fingernails from female fingers, nine vulvas in a shoebox.
Okay, so let's walk through that for a second. Let's rewind on a vulva. I was to say, I want to Google a vulva, but I could just go look in the mirror. Okay. I want to see what... So, do you just... How? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because every woman is built very...
bits.
Yes. Every woman's built different down there. Some have innies, some have outies. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So did they just like carve in to the pubic bone and just take all of it?
Probably from the pubic bone up is probably, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Like out.
I'm just like, how?
I know. Like, how do you save this specific part?
It's like cutting off an armpit. How do you cut off an armpit? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Huh. That's a thinker.
I just picture like a U-shaped flap of skin.
Yeah. I was picturing more of a triangle type of a shape. Like cut at like the leg.
Like would you
what I call the leg pits.
Yeah,
where your legs connect.
Like, Would you get like the, we're going to talk about this, I guess. Would you get the clit and everything or just the lips?
Right. You don't, I don't know
I'm if it's so sorry, inside but parts, I asked, these are important questions.
Or if it's literally just the outside lips.
Right. Is it just the lips or are we getting into the actual organs of the situation?
Well, it does. I mean, it just says vulvas. So I'm, my guess is it's just the outside.
Just the lips? Just the tip?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Confirmed.
Okay. So, and also Mary Hogan, who I told you we'd hear about her later. Mary Hogan's face was found in a bag and her skull was found in a box. Bernice Warden's heart was found on the stove, as a matter of fact. And Ed Gein was quite the arts and crafts type of guy because he incorporated body parts from the murders and grave robbing into his original terribly gruesome designs. He created a nipple belt, a shade pull made of lips, chairs upholstered in human skin, a lampshade made of human skin. Oh, also, okay. The chair is upholstered in human skin. I always pictured like a overstuffed recliner type of thing, but that's not what it was. It was a wooden chair. You know those wooden chairs, and then they have like the, I forget what it's called, but it's like almost like wicker, like what's it called? Caning.
Oh, caning. Yeah.
Yeah. In like the middle part where you sit, and sometimes on the back. So where the wooden chair would have had like the caning where it's like a woven like wicker thing, that's where the skin was. So it wasn't like entirely skin upholstered. It was like that seat section of a wooden chair was skin stretched over it.
Okay. So I
gross.
Big regret here. Yeah. Here, Googling the crime scene. big regret. Almost as big of a regret as our metal episode with the album cover.
Yes, that was a bad
That one is the one that got me. That is going to be the one throughout this entire two seasons that we do. That is going to be the one that got me.
Yeah. It's 100%. It was really fucked up.
Yeah.
There was a wastebasket made of human skin, and there were bowls made with human skulls and gloves made from human skin.
Like why? You know what I mean?
Right. In the kitchen, there were human organs in jars in the refrigerator, human shin bones propping up the kitchen table, and a cereal box with chunks of human scalps in it.
Check your cereal, people.
The house was very messy and smelly, with trash all over, and there was also no running water. In some ways, a lot of ways, actually, Philip Schuth, the mom in the freezer guy, from French Island, this really reminds me of that. How his mother died and they had no running water in the house and he just was kind of like a hoarder. Really reminds me of that guy. So it appeared that Ed had been living only in his bedroom, the kitchen, and dining room of the two-story farmhouse. The rest of the house, including his mother's room, had been boarded up, and to the investigator's surprise, the rest of the house was in pristine condition, save for a little dust. In Ed Gein's bedroom was some apparel, air quotes, apparel, mm-hmm. that he mm-hmm. fashioned out of humans. He made leggings out of the skin of someone's legs.
Way ahead of his time with the leggings.
Yeah. I hope that they shaved their legs before he did that.
Imagine one has hair and one doesn't. You just have lopsided leggings.
He also made a vest with the chest of a female that had the boobs still on it, and Ed Gein would dress up in the leggings and boob vest, and one of several masks that were made of human faces that hung on his bedroom walls that were stuffed with paper to keep their shape. So he would dress up with all these accoutrements to see how it felt to be a woman, and sometimes he would add a vulva for good measure.
There are better ways. There are better ways.
Yeah.
To learn what it's like to be a woman.
In jail, Ed Gein remained silent. He wasn't talking until he made a deal with them. A confession in exchange for a cup of coffee and a slice of apple pie with a slice of cheddar cheese on top of it.
What?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
It's apparently is a thing.
I've heard of that. And
so I would try it. At Taco John's, they have that thing. What's that thing called? It's like a thing that it's a dessert, and I think they only have it during Christmas time, and it's like an apple. It's like apple pie filling, and then it's got shredded cheese on it.
At where?
Taco John's.
It does not have cheese on it.
Yeah, it does.
Are you kidding? Don't be bullshitting. Are you serious? Taco?
No, I'm serious.
This deserves a Google.
Dessert. I'm trying to remember what it's called.
With cheese. Apple Grande Pizza? It's Taco John's Apple Grandes.
Apple Grande. That's it.
And they put cheese on that?
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh my God. Well, how come I didn't know that? Oh my God. I could really go for some Tato Olays right now.
Yeah. Oh my God. Those are so salty though. I like wake up in the middle of the night and have to like chug a whole glass of water.
Dude, though, is there nothing better after a night of drinking downtown, stopping by the Taco John's there on, what is it, Rose Street? Is that Rose Street?
Yeah, Rose and Monitor.
Yep. And getting a 6-pack and a pound.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
Oh, your belly's gonna be rocking in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Love to hear it.
Yeah, so after he got his apple pie with the cheese on it and cup of coffee, he happily chatted away and admitted to digging up the bodies with the help of his only trusted friend named Gus. And after Gus was sent to live at an old folks' home, he could no longer help with the nighttime cemetery raids, and Ed resulted to killing Mary Hogan and Bernice Warden. Police exhumed 8 women's bodies and found them to be mutilated, which checked out with Ed's confession. Ed had made as many as 40 trips to the cemetery in search of gruesome souvenirs. He frequented 3 different graveyards between 1947 and 1952. On about 30 of the 40-plus visits he made to these cemeteries, he described being in a daze-like state that he came out of during his visit to the cemeteries, and he said he'd leave the graves in good order and return home empty-handed 30 out of the 40 times. Ed denied having sex with the bodies that he dug up, explaining that they smelled too bad.
Well, duh.
Yeah.
No shit, Sherlock.
Also, a 16-year-old youth whose parents were friends with Ed Gein allowed their child to be at Ed's house sometimes and would go to baseball games and to movies with Ed. This 16-year-old youth reported that he had seen the shrunken heads that Gein kept at his house. Gein told this kid that they were relics from the Philippines that were sent to Ed from a cousin who had served in the Philippines in World War II. Well, as it turns out, these shrunken heads were determined to be human facial skins carefully peeled from corpses. During Gein's questioning, the Washara County Sheriff, Art Schley, reportedly banged Gein's head against the cement block wall out of frustration when he wouldn't talk right away, and he really messed everything up, because as a result of that little stunt, Gaines' confession was ruled to be inadmissible in court due to being considered a confession under duress. Ed Gaines' court trial started November 21st, 1957, and he was arraigned on one count of first-degree murder. This was due to prohibitive costs, and Gaines was only that's why Gaines was only tried for one of the murders, which was the murder of Bernice Warden, although he confessed to killing Mary Hogan. Ed pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. He was evaluated and diagnosed with schizophrenia and found mentally incompetent to stand trial. He was sent to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane, now it's called the Dodge Correctional Institute, in Waupun, Wisconsin, and he was later transferred to the Mendota State Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. A few months after his arrest, Ed Gaines' house and property was scheduled to be auctioned off, and there were rumors that it might be turned into some type of morbid museum, and the small town of Plainfield was already infested with reporters and looky-loos. So the townspeople were high-key opposed to this happening. So before, they really were. So before the auction, a mysterious fire started on the property, and it didn't seem to be very thoroughly investigated. It wasn't big on the priority list. When told about the fire that leveled his former home, Ed shrugged and said, "I guess it's just as well." After spending 9 years in a mental health facility, doctors determined that Gaines was mentally able to confer with counsel and participate in his defense. At the request of the defense, the trial was held without a jury and started November 7th, 1968. The trial lasted 1 week, and Judge Robert Gulmer presiding. On November 14th, 1968, Gaines was found guilty, but there was a second trial that dealt with Gaines' sanity, which was the same judge who ruled that Gaines was not guilty by reason of insanity based on testimony from doctors who were witnesses for both the prosecution and the defense. He was ordered to be committed to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane, which we mentioned earlier, changed its name to the more diplomatic-sounding Mendota State Hospital in later years. And the old... I had an old boss of mine who actually knew a nurse who worked at the hospital in Madison that Ed Gaines was housed in. And she said that when they would put on music for the patients, that Ed Gaines was the life of the party. He was a model resident, and he would dance with the staff sometimes, he spent the rest of his life there at the Mendota State Hospital until he died of respiratory failure from lung cancer on July 26, 1984, at the age of 77. So he outlived both of his parents by his mom was 67, so he outlived her by 10 years. He was buried by his parents and brother in a Plainfield, Wisconsin cemetery, but his grave is now unmarked because people frequently vandalized his headstone by chipping pieces of the stone off to take home as souvenirs. The entire headstone was actually stolen in 2000, and it was recovered the next year in June of 2001 near Seattle, Washington. So, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So after that, the headstone was moved to a stored unit that the Washara County Police Department owns. So.
Huh.
Yeah, so that's Ed Gaines.
Who the fuck steals a headstone? How?
I don't know. And I don't know what they think they were going to sell it or...
Right. That's weird. So that auction you were talking about, did you say it happened or no?
Yeah.
Okay, it did. Okay. Okay, so we all know I love Zach Bagans. So he has Ed Gein's cauldron in his haunted museum.
Really?
There's an episode, there's a show called Zach Bagans or Ghost Adventures Artifacts where Zach, the Ghost Adventures crew, buy haunted objects. And one of the guys brought this cauldron and he's like, this is, I don't want it anymore. It's haunted. This was Ed Gein's alleged cauldron. He apparently cooked like bones and bodies and all this stuff in it. And mm-hmm. this cauldron, if I remember correctly, was passed down through generations of this man. And this man's like family. So this man had this cauldron. He just wanted to get rid of it. So mm-hmm. Zach bought it for $2,800.
Wow. That
yeah.
kind of sounds like a steal. I don't know.
You're telling me.
Yeah.
It's pretty gross looking. It's a definite cast iron. It's a giant cast iron cauldron. It has to be cast mm-hmm. iron. It's huge.
Yeah, I bet it's really
heavy. It
looks
very heavy.
Mm-hmm. His Ed Gein's car was also auctioned off. And I don't know how much it went for, but it went like it was like a traveling sideshow. You know, pay 50 cents to see Ed Gein's car or whatever.
Yeah. So. That's so weird.
Yeah. So some other stuff was auctioned off, but like the house and property was just a loss.
It was just, yeah. Interesting. Well, I'm so glad we did Ed Gein. We needed to do that one.
Oh, yeah. We sure did.
Cannot, and it's our hometown murder. So like, of course, it has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much, Bree. Greatly appreciated. So glad you did it. Because if you yeah. weren't going to do it, I was going to do it. We should have made... Why didn't we make Nicole do it? I want to hear Nicole say nipple belt. I just feel like she couldn't say it without laughing. You know? I just feel Sorry. Like she would just laugh the whole time if she said nipple
oh,
belt.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so ridiculous.
Probably.
Sorry, Nicole. I obviously you're listening to this. You know damn well you'd laugh when you say nipple belt. Let's be honest.
Watch her, like, record her saying just nipple belt. So it'll be like... You know,
every time we say
outgoing music, and then it'll just be Nicole saying nipple belt.
Listen for the nipple belt Easter egg by Nicole. Oh, I love it. Well, thank you so much, Stranglers. Let's try and talk. Thank you so much, Stranglers, for listening to another episode of Perfect Stranglers. Tune in next Thursday where we will talk about something a little bit more lighthearted.
Awesome.
And that's that on that.
I can't wait.
I can't either, because I'm doing it. All right. Talk to you next Thursday.
Bye, everyone.
Nipple belt.